Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Darren McFarland here, barely. Willie and Donick.
What's up?
He's here. He may need to, we may need to switch roles here today for me to get through. Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Chase McCabe is off today. We've got another fantastic show we're excited about today. Coming up in the next segment, in studio with us, we'll talk to Brandon Wright. We'll talk a little basketball, a little Kobe, a little what's going on in his world. We'll do that at 10:15. Got a crazy, crazy game to talk about today as well. We'll do that. By the way, Elliot Friedman is supposed to join us at 1 o'clock. But it was pretty interesting last night in Washington. Well, these things I was seeing on Twitter, and, you know, at the time, it was like, it does kind of feel that way a little bit. A lot of people were throwing out there, this is pretty much sums up the Predators season, you know, through the course of the game. If you watched it, you know the craziness that was. I mean, some of the, you know, the fluky goals, weird stuff. And when I mean, it's one thing to see one of those in a night. It's another thing to see about three or four in a night. And oh, by the way, for them to come out on the other side with 2 points against the best team in hockey. So they were saying all that when the Predators were behind, like, man, this is just kind of sums up the Predators season. But to me, it's like when we see the end result, is this maybe the game? Is this the game that changes everything? Is this the game they can build something off of? Because that was a really good win.
Well, any win is a good win, especially against a team like the Washington Capitals. I'll tell you, you know, that's a they'd come in, they had lost 11 games in regulation all year. They had lost one game all year where they led going into the third period, one in regulation. I think they were 23-1-2, 23-1-3, something like that. That being said, you know, what are the things that have really plagued the Predators? Not being able to push through some rough times in a game. So last night is a classic example of, well, here we go again. Played a great first period or a stretch of hockey in the first period, and then all of a sudden you had some goofy bounces, maybe a little bad luck, maybe some of it self-inflicted, and you're down. And you're playing a team that is money in their own building in the third period. But they found a way to win. So that's a positive, right? The positive is they pushed through the adversity. They didn't give up. They kept fighting. And they got a big win. Now tonight, they play a team in the New Jersey Devils that aren't nearly as talented. But I would tell you, I would not doubt that John Hines and the entire coaching staff and the players know this 100%. They got to play better tonight than they played last night if they want to win. They still didn't play a very clean game. They didn't execute very well. They had a lot of turnovers. They had some bungled plays that handed them some gold. In the penalty box too much, for sure. There was a couple of weird calls there that I thought were sort of unfortunate. They were not, as I would say, dumb penalties. I thought it was really interesting. I was listening to Hal, because I had a different perspective than I do normally on the game, not only because I wasn't calling the game, but also because I was at a school function in the middle of it. So I listened to a lot of the first period and the third period on radio, watched the last, I don't know, 15 minutes of the game live, and then went back and watched the whole thing on TV. So while all of the hectic times were going on, I wasn't watching. I only picked it up in the third period. So I heard the good part, I guess. So, you know, while the storm is happening and all, I'm sure, the negativity on Twitter, which is natural, right? This is how the passionate fans work. They panic. They go nuts. Here we go again. All of that. I'm sure that was happening. I didn't go back and look. But
like I said, it was during that stretch, right, in the second period. They were like, this pretty much sums up the Predators season.
Right, but this is hockey, right? Hockey, you have a chance for the next play. This is sport. You have a chance to... The next play is a new play. The next game is a new game. That whole thing was a great win, but it reminded me some of, remember the Eastern road trip they took right before Christmas where they went 4-0-1. They were kind of all over the place. They didn't play great 60-minute games, but they found ways to win. You got to have some of those. Okay, so last night is a great start. But tonight, you're pressing your luck if you're going to win that way again, right? You got to play better. Clean up the mistakes. Focus on what has to happen night in and night out. But there was a lot of good, obviously, of winning that game. I mean, Ryan Johansson has been the guy everybody's talking about throughout the bye week. Got to have more. What's going on during the broadcast, as you would expect. The NBC guys were calling him out for some things. And boom, he gets a big goal, big assists in the third period comeback. So that's a start, maybe, right? Mikael Granlund, another guy. What's Granlund? What kind of production is he at? He's now got 6 goals in his last 12 games. I thought he played very well last night. That's a good sign. So there's, you know, you take these little steps forward, but it's one game, right? The issue hasn't been winning a game here or there.
Right.
It's putting together those 3, 4, 5 straight weeks of really solid hockey. And honestly, it's got to be 2 months, right? It's got to be 2 months of solid hockey if they're going to get to where they want to go.
Well, they'll get to where they want to go if they play like they did last night. The effort was there. The pushback was there. It's what we've been talking about for a good portion of this season. Everybody's wanted to see if they would have. We've heard the word mental fortitude, right?
Right.
Mental fortitude.
Now
so they had that.
That's probably the biggest thing that they had last night.
They had a lot of things go against them. Just
right.
A lot of
and
fluke,
some of it was on them.
Weird plays that, I mean, how many times you see that in hockey? I mean, the weird bounce off the boards, and of course Ovechkin's right there in front. You know, UC chases it behind the net, and Rutrow, Nick Bonino. I mean, how many times are you ever going to see that in a season? Once? That's it. I mean, you're right? I mean, how many times ever will you see that? Callie Yarncroke trying to clear the puck. Hits it right off Ovechkin's skate, right to Tom Wilson, goal. I mean, just and really, Washington had a fluke play, too. I mean, look, the Ryan Johansson shorthanded goal was Holtby. That was a big...
That was a mistake.
Big mistake by Holtby.
Yep.
Trying to clear it. And Johansson jumped in front of it and took it the rest of the way.
Yep. And makes a great shot. I mean, yep. The thing is, you have to do something with the opportunity, right? It's one thing for Holtby to make a bad clear.
Right, because 2 goals by the Capitals, they really didn't have to do anything.
No, they just had to tap it in.
They didn't even have to
They didn't
do anything.
Have to touch it.
Yeah.
That's a true gift right there. But Johansson, yeah, he gets an opportunity because it's a poor decision by Holtby, but he makes a great shot, right? That's how many times during the course of the year that you don't even remember a team makes a mistake, because hockey's a game of mistakes, right? Just a lot of them don't develop into a goal, or a goalie makes a great save, or a guy doesn't bury it when he has a chance. So you take all the positives from that, but you have to learn from – you're just going to have to play sharper. Now, in theory, it should be a little easier to play sharper against a less talented team in the Devils than an ultra-talented team like the Capitals. But it's on to the next challenge here.
Something else that stood out to me is the second power play unit, to me, has looked like the better unit, in my opinion. Turris.
Lately, no doubt.
Forsberg. Granlund, that group has looked like the better power play unit. Do you agree?
Well, the results would tell you that, too. I mean, they've been getting the goals. So I think that's something to look at. Kyle Turris played more than anybody last night, 5-on-5, among the forwards. And he's playing on the penalty kill, if you notice. Hal Gill has been pointing that out. Since John Hines took over, he's given Kyle Turris a shot to play more. Moves him up to the second line. I kind of like loading up the first 2 lines. It looked good last night, but of course the 4 line balanced attack looked good for a couple of games here or there. They're just, something's got to stick. So I'm taking the approach today of not getting too high or too low. You know me, I'm the guy when they screw up that's a lot more glasses still half full. I'm going to take the same approach today. I'm not going to have a celebration that, hey, everything is great now with 1 win. It's got to be every night. But there's some good stuff that comes out of this. But you're right. Kyle Turris is getting a chance now, right, to play in the role that he wants to play. and that's be one of the main guys, play on the top two lines, be on the special teams. And now the other guy that's got to do it is Matt Duchene has got to just have to – he's going to have to say, if this is going to work the way they're playing right now, I got to play the wing.
Yep.
And I know I didn't come here to play the wing. I'm going to be here for 8 years, 7 years, whatever it is. Got to suck it up. Got to play wing because he's got to play well, right? Life may not be perfect. Somewhere in here, somebody has got to flourish in a role that is not their customary role.
Fair points.
But they got it done.
They did.
I give them full marks. That could have been an easy game to say, huh, it's just not our year, man. We're so unlucky. You know, the best players aren't our best players. It's just going wrong. We changed the coach. It didn't work. Too bad. They showed some fight, showed some guts, and found a way last night in a tough place.
Really good win. Now, like you said, let's see the follow-up. Tonight is the final game for the month of January. It'll be against the Devils. Of course, the storylines write themselves. John Hines returning to Newark. Of course, P.K. Subban is on the other side. Wayne Simmonds, who was briefly here, is on the other side. And it's a Devils team that is going absolutely nowhere. So you've got an opportunity to make this a really good road trip and close out the month with four big points on the road before coming back home on Saturday to host Vegas to kick off a new month that's loaded with hockey. All right, we will come back. Brandon Wright in studio. We'll talk some basketball and some hoops with him. It's been a while since we've caught up with him. We'll find out what's going on in his world. We do that next. I'm Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. They played at Rupp Arena last night in Lexington, and we talked about it yesterday. You thought the line was too low. I guess not. Kentucky wins by 9. Didn't even really come close to covering. Vanderbilt was up 7 at the half.
Well, and I was not able to see that game. I was stuck at a school function last night. Otherwise, I'd have been the couch potato flipping around all the channels, but by those who watched the game, they said Vanderbilt really, you know, had an opportunity not just to, you know, hang around and look respectable like they did, but really win the game. You know, had they made some more big shots, but that's been the problem, right? But it's still an encouraging performance for them. You know, they made some outside shots. I mean, this is not a team that's going to post guys up. They're limited, right? They don't have a whole lot. They're going to shoot a lot of threes. They got to make some threes. But Saban Lee had the kind of game that he's capable of. You know, got to the free throw line a little bit, got to the basket some. Maybe they have a formula here that could help them win some games down the road. That's what you have to hope for, that you get out of this.
Elijah, you watch a lot of college basketball. I watched the Kentucky-Texas Tech game Saturday night. It was, for a guy who's been banging on college basketball this year that's not very good, that's me. I thought it was a really good game. I don't know how good Texas Tech really is. They beat West Virginia at home last night. I wasn't overly impressed with them. You've got a team like Dayton I don't really know anything about other than they're highly ranked. I know they won last night on the road.
They're a sleeper. They're definitely a sleeper.
San Diego State. I mean, if college basketball's down, are these teams – I know somebody's got to be good. Are these teams legit, or are they just two teams that are taking advantage of a lot of powerhouse programs that are down?
It's a little bit of both. I would say it's definitely a little bit of both. San Diego State, I'm still trying to wrap my head around if they are number four in the country good. But I can tell you for sure that Dayton is the real deal. They have their best player, Obi Toppin, is a guy who has snuck his way into the conversation to be a top 10 pick in the NBA draft this year. And he had 22 and 10 last night, only missed about two or three shots. Dayton's got some guys, they have some complimentary players that are pretty good too. And in a year where college basketball's a little down, I wouldn't be shocked to see a Gonzaga, which Gonzaga might be the best overall team in the country, or a Dayton, or San Diego State's any good. This is the year in which they can make a run.
So who in the Power Fives, who's legit? Like legit, ooh, legit.
I say Duke's still legit.
Oh, really? I watched them. I don't think they're legit at all.
They're getting better.
They're getting a whole lot better.
They're getting better. I still don't see... I don't know. I still don't see the special players.
Yeah, I don't
for
either.
Them right
I mean,
now.
They may get better. Talented. And Kentucky's going to get better. I mean, clearly.
They're both getting better. But right. I think relative to some of the teams they've had before, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, honestly, probably the best team I've seen is Louisville.
Now, they go as Jordan Nwora goes, too. Last night, they end up getting a big win on the road at Boston College, and Nwora had over 30 points and hit 7 threes. But they go through some games where, offensively, they are quite inept. Now, they're one of the best defensive teams in the country. It's just my problem with them is night in, night out, the offense isn't there. And a lot of that's to do with their three-point shooting.
Speaking of hoops, the big man has arrived, Brandon Wright. Brandon, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. Appreciate you having me.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, man. What's been going on?
What's been going on in your world?
A lot of rehab, kids, wife.
Yeah, I know.
Family stuff.
How's that
fun,
going?
Though, man. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Got three girls.
Wow.
5-year-old, twin 2-year-olds. It's fun.
You got your hands full.
4 women in the house.
Yeah. How's sleep right now?
Sleep is fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're past that stage.
Okay, good.
Yeah, they sleep well. You know, twins, they do their thing. But, I mean, after you get about 6 to 8 months, depending on your child, you're good to go.
Yeah. We got a lot of things we're going to touch on with you this hour. But now that you just brought up having girls, mm-hmm. being a father of girls, and the whole Kobe Bryant story on Sunday, I mean, it just rocked the sports world. It rocked the world. Yeah. I mean, he was more than just a basketball player. He's a global icon. And just to know the circumstances for you, my guess is it probably hit home a little bit more than even a lot of people who have obviously taken this really hard.
Yeah, it hit hard. I mean, and you know, knowing him and playing against him for 12 years and, you know, all that's great. But, you know, first initial thought that comes to my mind is, you know, losing a 13-year-old girl, you know, losing that whole crew and the people you leave behind. You know, like you said, I have 3 young daughters myself, so that really hurt the most. You know, I just kind of froze when I got the news.
Yeah,
and I was thinking it was fake. I was hoping it was fake.
Yeah, we all were.
Yeah, but I kind of froze for like an hour. I was actually putting my daughter to bed for a nap, and I was changing her diaper, and I took her diaper off, and I didn't put her diaper on for like 30 minutes. She was like, "Daddy, put my diaper on. It's time to go night night." You know. I mean, I literally froze in her room.
Wow.
So it was like that.
Mm. So you just said it. I mean, you've been around him. You've been on the court. We've all seen it, but you've seen a different perspective than us. So what was your perspective?
I think he was a two-part person. It was the early part of his career where he, you know, set the world on fire coming out of high school, you know, big-time scorer. You know, he patterned his game after Jordan. He was such a talented player. He kind of blazed into the league, and, you know, he got the legal trouble with the case in Colorado. And he was winning championships. And he was portrayed as a bad teammate. He had the feud with Shaq. You know, he got into it with Phil. And then, ironically, when his team started to decline after that last championship, when, you know, his teams really weren't any good anymore, I think he changed as a person. I think he started to really enjoy and cherish what he had. I think he really started to give more to the guys in the league, give more to the game. And I think that was his second part. You know, him being a father, you know, him getting injured, and him seeing the world in a different light.
When you have a green light go, just mash the gas pedal mentality, basically with everything you do, it's got to be tough, right? Because clearly, as you just described, and other people have said this, he had to take his foot off the gas some. Like, he realized that you cannot be full speed ahead at all times in your life.
Yeah.
And so he had to back off and learn how to back off. And I wonder how tough that is for somebody that's wired like that to you know, back off and take a little bit different approach.
Well, you know, honestly, I don't think he backed off. I think he just shifted lanes.
Okay.
Me and my wife were actually talking about this yesterday. I think he was just a different person in the second half of his career. And he started to put his focus not only on basketball, he started to put his focus on his marriage, his fatherhood, you know, female sports, volleyball, basketball, the Mamba Sports Academy.
Mm-hmm.
No, he took that passion and energy he had when he won those five championships and those two finals MVPs and all those All-Stars and those scoring championships and shifted lanes and started putting it on those things.
I like that. I've heard a lot of former players say that he talked to them a lot. You know, sometimes obviously he trash talked, but he also, if you did something that I watched an interesting, it was on Showtime. Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson do a podcast, but they're doing the show. I stumbled upon it the other day. It was the first time I'd ever seen it. It's on Showtime, so I don't know if it's also a television show as well. But Matt Barnes is the one when they were in Orlando who had the ball out of bounds, and he, you know, act like he was going to throw the ball at
Kobe
his.
Kobe didn't flinch. Yeah,
Kobe never moved, and he thought, "Oh my gosh, like this guy is going to want to fight me, you know, the rest of my career." Instead, Kobe was impressed, one, that he would ever, you know, that he would do that to him. And it actually kind of started kind of their relationship. Kobe would constantly talk to him. Like, and other players, I've heard them say, "You made a move," or something like, "Where did you come up with that?" You know, he was always trying to study the game.
He was a deep learner. He really wanted to learn. And he's actually done that with me before, because one game in the Staples Center, this is when they were on the downtrend. And I was with the Mavericks. We beat them pretty bad. And I had a great night. I didn't miss a shot. It was 10 for 10 that night. And he was out that night. But he came over to our locker room after the game, and he talked to a couple guys, and he talked to me. And he was asking me about my left hand and the stuff I do in the off season. And then at the end of that conversation, he said, "You know, use your right hand more." Talk about my right hook, because I'm a pretty dominant left-hand player overall. But, I mean, he was literally trying to take something from everyone.
Yeah.
You know, he would take something from an aunt if he could offer him something, you know?
There, in fact, he told the story, I guess, I don't remember how it happened or what exactly his injury was, but he had broke his right wrist or something. He had surgery, and he couldn't use it. And a lot of players talked about him showing up, and they would show up to the gym, and he would be in there for hours doing nothing but doing stuff with his left hand
because
he could use it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way he was. And he was always trying to learn something new. I think we can all take that from him. I mean, he wasn't wasting time. You know, he was always trying to pour into himself and be more knowledgeable. I mean, he knew five languages, basically six, you know, working on a six. So, I mean, he was just a remarkable person, had a great brain, you know, just a brain you want to just, you know, look at and examine and, you know, see how he was wired.
You brought up Michael Jordan. We were, in fact, it was Monday after skate. We were all kind of sitting downstairs at Bridgestone Arena, and myself and Willie and Hal Gill and Chris Mason. And Chris Mason brought up, have you seen the video of Kobe and Michael, where it's Michael doing these moves and the video switches and it's like Kobe?
It's like a mashup. Would you call it a mashup?
That's probably the best way to describe it. I didn't know exactly what you call it. It's crazy how they looked exactly alike on the court with a lot of moves.
Yeah, he said it too. Everything he did, he wanted to be Jordan-like. He would watch Jordan interviews. You know, he wanted to chew gum like Jordan. He wanted his lips to move like Jordan. He wanted his mannerisms off the court to be like Jordan. He wanted to walk like Jordan. I mean, you can take so many, you know, pieces of video and film and from on and off the court and put it side by side, and you'll see the same person. I mean, he literally wanted to be exactly like Jordan.
We will come back more with Brandon Wright here on Darren Donick and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
NBA veteran and Nashville product Brandon Wright is in the studio with us here. Darren Donick and Chase, 102.5 The Game. So, Brandon, I was trying to get the timeline while we were on the break, because I can remember, you know, your arc on your career here. So with Kobe Bryant, because I think about this a lot with all the tributes that you're seeing you're one of those guys that you grew up watching Kobe Bryant. He's not a whole lot older than you, but when you were coming up through the ranks and developing your game, he's ascending, right? So take us back to that time. How old were you when he broke into the league, when he came out of high school?
Yeah, I was about 11 or 12 years old, and I watched him. I thought he was a great player. You know, he was one of my favorite guys to watch.
So you rooted for him. Did you root for the Lakers, or did you just enjoy watching him?
I mean, yeah. I like the Lakers. I like the team they had. I thought they were entertaining to watch.
Were you a Shaq fan?
Yeah, I was a Shaq fan, too. I had watched old clips of him in LSU, though. I just thought he was a freak of nature, like body-wise and stuff like that, before he got, like, huge. But, yeah, so I watched him a lot. And then, actually, my first preseason game, my first game ever, it was in the preseason. My rookie year was against the Lakers in Hawaii.
Wow. In Hawaii?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of teams do these offsite, offsite training.
Well, if you're going to be offsite, you might as well go to Hawaii.
It's a great place to go. But I was able to finally see him in person, you know. And that year, they were supposed to be no good. And that was the year they made to the finals. They lost to Boston, I think, 4-1 that year. But that was supposed to be a bad year for them. And so I played a lot of games against him. I was in the Pacific Division with Golden State. We didn't win a lot against them. And I was able to watch them win championships. Win like two championships when I
right.
So, first part
so
of my
what's
league.
It like when you first get into the league and you're playing against guys like him who you grew up watching?
Yeah.
How strange was that?
It's pretty strange until you know look in the mirror and realize you're comparable, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you have the talent, it's the reason you're there. You kind of got to get over it real quick. I mean, you hear from guys all the time. You get a little starstruck, you know.
Yeah.
You know, guys you see go out there and put up great season after great season, got a lot of talent. You know, they can jump just as high as you. They can do some great things, but you kind of got to get over it. And it's always fun to go up against guys that you know watch on TV. But he was special. He could literally not do anything for three quarters and take over at any quarter.
Wow. So it is interesting how you grow up. You watched this happen. You watched some guys, you know, for two, three straight years there, you had these really special players come out and go right into the pros from high school, right? And so thinking back, you had Kobe, you had LeBron not too far after that, and you had Kevin Garnett,
yeah,
right? So you were watching this, and then you get to high school at Brentwood Academy, and you're on the radar very early. So take us back to that time. The whole one-and-done thing had not happened yet, right, as you're entering high school.
It was in the talks, you know, that they were going to change the rules, but it was no complete certainty that they were. And, I mean, I had a lot of people talking to me, but not, you know, not like hype men or anything. Like, we was like, these are like real people, people that know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, they say if you get the opportunity, you probably, you know, you need to go out of high school. And that was kind of – it was taken off the table for me.
What year was that in your high school career that rule came in?
I think they took it off the table in 2005, I think.
Okay.
So a year before I graduated.
Yeah.
So that – you know, I was being recruited heavily by pretty much anyone. And it was kind of a boulder off the shoulders. You know, easy choice to go to North Carolina. But that rule is – that rule will be coming back soon. Definitely. So, they'll definitely start letting guys – come straight out of high school pretty soon.
And that's probably the right move, and that's how they do college baseball.
Yeah.
So what do you think the ideal rule would be? Is it an option? If you go to college, are you committed for a longer period than 1 year?
I think, first of all, I'm a little worried about it because I think this is a new day and age. I think all kind of guys are going to go out of high school. We could see, you know, anywhere from 7 to 12 high school participants trying to go to the NBA draft. So I'm a little worried about that. But I think you should be able to go out of high school, you know. But I think if you do go to college, I think 2 years is good. That's a good number. I think three is a little excessive, but I like the 2 years.
So that's the trade-off. And then the other thing that's there now is you have the established G League, right?
Yeah.
You have a lot of guys who there's at least a safety net. There's a place to go without going overseas.
Yeah.
You're one step away like a minor leaguer. But what's your opinion of the G League in terms of how they develop players? Now, think about guys coming in. If I'm making the choice to come out of high school and I'm thinking if I don't make a roster when I'm 18, 19, what's the G League compared to the experience at college?
I mean, I think the G League is a good tool. And I never played in the G League, so I don't really know how the the game plays. I just watched it on film. Yeah. I mean, the defense is atrocious overall. But, but I mean, you guys just try to get out there and showcase themselves. I think the G League is best when you get these first-round guys that are real, real young and just not ready. You just want to get them experience. And then you got guys, you know, take a local guy like Jordan Bone, who was drafted, I think he was last pick in the second round. You know, he'll get a great G League experience. And then in a couple of years, he'll have opportunity to come up to the big club and do some good things because he plays so many games, worked so hard for 2-3 years, and, you know, he'll get a shot.
One thing, you were talking about how Kobe Bryant would really study and work on his game. He was always adding new moves. He and Michael Jordan both had a great ability to, if they needed to post up, or even from the medium post, 12, 15 feet out, they were tremendous, right? They had all the moves. They could shot fake. They had fadeaway jumpers. We're seeing less of that, right? I mean, you're a classic big man. You're a shot blocker. But the evolution of where the game is going is really interesting, right? You just don't see a whole lot of guys posting up these days.
Nah, I mean, it's pretty much dead overall.
Are you sad about that?
I mean,
because one of the things that I think is fun is to watch a guy operate.
Yeah, I love the footwork. I love the footwork of Kobe and Jordan, the way they used to operate, the attention to detail. But these days, it's either, you know, you either shoot the three or you're dunking at the rim. You're like a leaper, you know.
Yeah.
It's really not much in between. And we got guys in this league that can still fill it up from the mid range, but you know, analytics and coaches, a lot of coaches, it's a bad shot. You know, don't shoot that 12-footer. You know, drive to the hole, kick it out for a three, or try to get to the rim. So it's a little alarming, but now we talk about this all the time, me and my colleagues, it's cycles.
Yeah.
It'll go back. You know, we'll be talking about this in 10 years, sitting here in the same spot, talking about 12 big men getting the ball.
Yeah.
For 10 post-ups a game, you know?
I hope so. The math, theoretically, I don't know what's going to change the math, but you're seeing these crazy games right now where you got a lot of games nightly that are 135 to 125.
Yeah,
right?
It's crazy. I mean, I was watching I watch random games, and Milwaukee and Washington played the other night, and Washington scored 131 and got beat by 20.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about that, you know? They got to be by 20 points. I mean, that's just how the game is going. Threes, layups, you know, get out in transition. Offensive rebounds are high right now because coach is not really emphasizing as much on rebounding as much as they used to. You know, defense is all about not the points you're giving up, but the percentage of rating and points you're giving up. So it's a new day, and like it's no social media is kind of hurting the game too a little bit, I think, with all the mixtapes and exposure, you know.
It's interesting. So what factor is that? Like, fill me in on that, because I understand. I mean, I've read up on why, just with the math, and the fact is, guys 6'9", 6'10", can hit these threes, right? You can't leave them open. They'll make them. So that brings the guys out. It creates the space, and now you have driving lanes, and I can see why the offense works. But where do the mixtapes come in?
I mean, just, you know, you got a lot of, you know, you got slam balls, life, and you know, you just, and
they want to bring that into
it's just part of the times. Technology is huge these days. You know, you get more exposure, and more people want to see you. You know, we got these kids coming in the NBA. They already got 150,000 followers. You know, it's just how it is these days. You know, we didn't have that around my second, third year, that's when Twitter got really, really hot. It was a big thing. And it was just crazy. And, you know, you see the guys shooting the threes from 38 feet. Guys can make them, though. You see Dame Lillard last night pull up from just past the half court line. But, you know, in the NBA, 3 points is more than 2 points. And that's, and that's the philosophy right now.
That sure is. I'll tell you. Well, when we come back, Darren, we're going to talk. I want to get him to talk about this young Memphis team because they've got some of these elements, right? Yeah. I mean, Ja Morant is – got some highlights in him every night. They won again last night, by the way. So we'll get to him because Brandon certainly is familiar with that franchise.
No doubt about it. We'll do that to close out hour number one. Brandon Wright in studio here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brandon Wright has been nice enough to hang out with us. Willie brought up Brandon,
Memphis Grizzlies, they've gone through some tough times, but because of the tough times, they got rid of a lot of payroll. And they were able to kind of like start over. They got a lot of high draft picks. Certainly
made some smart trades.
They really did. Yeah. And this kid, Ja Morant, who we watched in the OVC, which, you know, we were like, whoa. And we talked to a lot of the coaches. They're like, this kid is the real deal. Because, you know, early on, we kept hearing like, this guy's going to be a lottery pick, or he's going to be top five. And we were like, really? He's that good? And as the season went along, it was like, oh, he is that good. The Grizzlies, what do you see when you watch them?
They have a great young nucleus with a good mix of solid veterans that have been playing in the league for a long time, that know their roles and do their jobs, and no locker room disturbances or anything like that. But they got a great core. I mean, I like Ja. Jaren Jackson is a really good player also, and I even like the Clark kid. You know, he's been coming off the bench for him and bringing a huge spark. I think he had a good game last night. They can be a talented team if they keep it together. You know, it's always a big if you can keep those small market teams together. You know, one of those guys might, end up in Chicago or L.A. or, New York. But, man, they got about 2 or 3 years of growth to try to really take off and see what they can do. But, man, Ja's been spectacular. Man, I love what he's been doing. You know, he doesn't rely on one part of his game to slow him down. And that's what I like about him. He's not playing like a rookie. He's playing like a guy that's, seasoned vet.
Have you had a chance to watch – I know Zion Williamson just came back. Have you had a chance to watch him?
Yeah, I've seen him quite a bit. Watched him a lot last year at Duke.
Yeah.
Watched him a little bit in the preseason. I watched these last two games. He's looking good. I mean, the biggest thing with him is health. There really hasn't been a guy – ever coming to NBA with that body type.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going to happen? You know, who knows if he's going to last for 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, I mean, he's pretty heavy overall. He doesn't carry it in a bad way. He's just a big guy. And, how's that pounding, handle on him over 82-game season?
Let me ask with that, because – I mean, we're watching it here with Aaron Nesmith with a stress fracture. Mm-hmm. We saw what happened to Darius Garland last year. Are you concerned the wear and tear on some of these guys who grew up and you went through it? So you're the right guy to say to get perspective on it, because what you hear some theories is with these guys so big and strong, and you play so many games coming through the ranks. You know, sometimes 3-4 games on a Saturday, come back, play another couple in a tournament over a weekend, and the stress that it puts on your joints and things. Are you worried about that? You see a lot of injuries like this now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm worried about it. I mean, but, guys are not going to stop playing.
is there a smarter way to play, where maybe you don't play as many games, or you get more conscious of this load management at a younger age?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see him cut more games on the youth level. You're not cutting any games in the NBA because of money or any professional sport. They're not going to cut any games. But I would love to see him cut back a little bit when you're younger, because the body is not made to take the type of pounding that we put on ourselves. You know, you're not supposed to be playing like that. You're not supposed to be jumping 40 inches in the air, landing, 6 to 10 times a game like that. You're supposed to be doing other things. And, it's one of those things where if we get more, we get smarter about the technology we use and how we take care of guys' bodies and, because this is still brand new stuff. This is a new age as far as the players that have played that many games are finally starting to come in the NBA. We'll get to see over the next 10 to 20 years how these guys hold up or break down.
Load management, that's the key phrase that the NBA is throwing out there. What do you think about the guys sitting? And I know the Spurs were kind of like the first to do it, and now everybody is doing it, but that it's also created this firestorm with, sitting out and people pay a lot of money. How do you feel about taking nights off and how they're trying to handle that?
I mean, honestly, they're just trying to protect the guys, man. It's tough. I mean, it's long seasons. Guys go through it. After about 2 weeks in the NBA, you're tired.
Yeah.
So guys need it. And if guys have had like a previous injury history, you might have to need to be a little bit careful about, how you load them, especially knee injuries and lower extremity joint injuries. You need to be careful about, what you do with them and how much they're playing and, You know, it's like I said, it all goes back to the technology and the science we're using to preserve guys' bodies.
What do you think? What's life after basketball for Brandon Wright? What's your interest? I mean, right now I know you're watching your girls grow up, and you said you're rehabbing. But what do you want to do? What's life after basketball going to be? Do you know?
Not particularly. I mean, I got my hands in a lot of pots.
Yeah.
But you know, I have my team Brandon Wright organization, which is girls basketball.
Awesome.
You know, I'll be doing that, and you know, basically just supporting my young girls, whatever they want to do. And my wife has some stuff going on the side I can't talk about, but it's about to drop pretty soon. So I'll be there to support that. But you know, I'm just hanging out, you know, taking care of my body. Probably not done playing.
Okay.
Had some opportunities, but just need to get my.
You just want to make management. Sure everything's right.
Yeah, load management.
Because look, for people that have, you know, I mean, you can certainly talk about this. The guys that go, when you have to just constantly battle the injuries and the rehab, like after a while, it's so mentally taxing on you, right?
Yeah.
We talked about a lot when Andrew Luck announced the retirement, mm-hmm. right? With that part of it, just the willingness to want to go back through it again with the rehabbing an injury. You've gone through a lot of these. So what's your mindset of that?
Yeah, I mean,
could you sort of relate when he was saying these things?
Oh, no question. I mean, it's easy to just say, I'm just done with this, man. Let's just go do something else. You know, especially if you already made a lot of money, you know, you've done well for yourself. You know, it's easy to say, man, you know, let's relax now. Let's not have to go through this, and let's not have to go down this road again. And, you know, guys are just, you know, I think you'll see it more and more. I think guys will, you know, 7, 8, 9 years, they'll be done. And, you know, if the injuries start to pile up, you know, what's the point? What's the risk? You know, you want to go home and be able to play with your kids and be around your family and be pain-free.
Football, we're definitely seeing that.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt. Yeah. What do you think of the move of Vanderbilt hiring Jerry Stackhouse?
I love the move. You know, they're struggling, obviously, on the court, you know. I want to see that losing streak end pretty soon. But
he does too.
Yeah, oh yeah. But you know, I know a lot of the guys he hired, and I know those are good guys, and they work extremely hard. You know, most of them are NBA guys. So, you know, when you come from the NBA, all you do is work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's long hours every single day. So those guys they'll get it in order. And he was recruiting well. He's great on the circuit as far as knowing who's good and who isn't good, and you know, not trusting that star, but. Maybe he's a two-star, but we know he's a player. He'll find those guys. I think he's going to do a great job. You know, a little bit down on people, a little bit down on him right now because they're not winning, obviously. But you know, I love everything he stacks about.
Do you have aspirations to do any coaching at all on your end?
I don't know about that, man. Not yet. I mean, I've had some opportunities from numerous people. But I don't know if that's the role for me right now.
Interesting.
I think coaching is probably – even longer hours than actually
I was
going
to say, probably know? When you say that out loud, of all the hours they have to put in, it's not for everybody.
Yeah, and you make much less money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, but you think that's he's going to get it turned around? And
oh, no question. He's going to recruit well. The player development aspect over there will be great. I know the guys they have over there. I know the guys they have in place. I know how to run the program. Yeah, he's going to do a great job. I'm excited for him.
I know you were very close and followed Darius Garland, you know, Brentwood Academy, the same thing. How is he doing? How is he adjusting to the NBA lifestyle?
He's doing all right. He's not shooting the ball well. I think it's a big adjustment for him, especially on defense. But that's how it is for everyone. You're going to come in and it has some struggles. You know, he's been up and down with his shooting. I think that's the biggest thing he'll probably lock in on is this offseason is being more consistently – you know, being able to be more consistent and make his jump shots. But he'll be a fine player. You know, it's all about the situation and the fit. You know, I don't like that they're playing two-point guards. That doesn't do them any good up there in Cleveland, but they'll figure that out. And, you know, hopefully they'll be moving in the right direction.
Did you get to see Aaron Nesmith much before he got hurt?
I seen he was dominating.
I mean, his numbers were really good. I mean, he looks good to me, but you have a better eye for how his game would translate. But I hear – you know, he's a guy that really has a bright future.
Oh, he'll be a fine player. Just got to get healthy. You know, he's probably the same thing, a load management type of thing. I mean, you get stress fractures. That's what it's from. I mean, it's just a lot of work over a short amount of period of time. And got to get him back on the court. He's a good player. I like watching him.
All right, who wins on Sunday?
I'm going to say the Chiefs. I'm not 100% confident in
okay.
it.
Okay.
But I say the Chiefs.
Because of Mahomes?
Just because of Mahomes, yeah.
He's fun to watch.
Yeah, he is. He is.
And quite honestly, what we've talked about with just kind of how the game has evolved and changed to what it is today, he's kind of really, I don't know if this is a good comparison or not, but he's kind of like the Steph Curry of football.
Yeah. I mean, he's
I think there is a little bit of
he's
that.
He's that exciting.
He's yeah. changed the game a little bit. Nobody plays like him.
But in the last couple of years, this is probably the, like, I'm not that confident about the pick, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Last year, I thought the Patriots were going to win the game. This uh-huh. year, I don't know. I wouldn't put money on it this year. I wouldn't
okay.
bet on it.
Hmm. Well, maybe that just means it's going to be a really
plus,
good game.
Plus, I don't have a dog in the fight either, so it's yeah. kind of cool to sit back and relax, you know?
Yeah.
I'm excited, though, to see, because I can remember watching John Elway in his first Super Bowl. It didn't go so well. Like, Dan Marino's first didn't go well. Then you had Joe Montana and Tom Brady. They did fine, you know? So this is his first yeah. crack, really, on the
huge
on the
stage.
Biggest yeah. stage, right? And they're going to rely heavily on him. How he plays is going to tell the story, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this they probably need to win this one because when he gets that huge contract, it's going to mess the cap up.
Yep.
Yes.
So they won't have as much flexibility, like money-wise. So if he gets this one, he'll be in good shape.
Yep, good stuff. Hey, good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
I appreciate you guys. Thank
Best
you very much.
Best of luck with everything. Brandon Thank Wright, you. We really appreciate him stopping by. We will come back. Hour number two, Darren, Donnie, and Chase next.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.